I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the show, Mike Max, Ron Shira. And this is always, I purposely don't ask Ron what he did the past week because I want to be surprised like you are on the show is to find out what kind of success he found out in the field, whether he's fishing, hunting big game, hunting small game, whatever it is. I want to hear it when you hear it because it's kind of like something you look forward to. It's like when you pick up the morning newspaper and you're not sure what's going to be in there. When I was a kid, we'd get a weekly paper and I'd go in and I'd get that Gaylord Hub and I wouldn't know for sure what the headlines were going to say. And I didn't want to know because I wanted to be surprised because it's one of life's little victories that you get. So Ron, you start the show by telling us how it went down in Iowa when you're quail hunting.
It's going to be a small victory. Well, I'll get to that. First off, I got to say, it's not often I kind of feel sorry for you, but I have the last few days because I heard that they dedicated another press box to our good close personal friend, Sydney.
Yeah, another one.
And it got me thinking, there won't be any left when it's your turn.
What, about 45 years they build another stadium?
They'll find one up in... maybe up in Roseau, they can
Babbitt. Maybe
Babbitt. They'll dedicate to the Mike Max dedication. Because there won't be anybody there.
Yeah, it'd be more of an outhouse than a.
Yeah, well, there are restrooms. That's right.
Yeah.
So there's still some hope for you.
Well,
anyway, yes, I. It's kind of interesting. You know, last week I hunted Western Minnesota for one day and had. Just amazing.
Yeah, very encouraging to hear what you had to say.
Nine birds and saw about 70 of them. But it was all, easy to explain, a lot of cover. So now I go down to Iowa this past few days to way to the extreme southwest Iowa. We're filming for a show called The Flush on the Outdoor Channel. And part of the reason I went down there is I got word that the quail had exploded in southwest Iowa, extreme southwest Iowa. And so we would go do a quail hunt, and then also heard you could your pheasants mixed in. So went down there, and the first day of quail hunting, first half a day, never fired my gun.
What are we looking at for terrain here? Switchgrass?
It's very interesting. We were hunting, first of all, way south of Council Bluffs. I was just a couple miles from Nebraska and a few miles from Missouri, so way down there. But along the Missouri River... the Missouri River at one time was very, very wide, and so it's a huge amount of flatland from the river, and then it goes...
Because it's receded or what?
Yes. Historically, yeah. It must have been 5 miles wide at one time.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you were just a kid. And then it goes...
So you're saying there's been climate change many, many years ago, not just now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
And, anyway, then there are the Los, what they call the Los Hills that... break up from that were really the shoreline of the old Missouri River at one time. So anyway, to make a long story. So we started on that flat ground and beautiful native prairie.
Between what would have been the shoreline at one time and the rivers where you're hunting?
Yeah, real flat. And anyway, to make a long story short, nothing. And it was a little different kind of habitat than I thought for quail, although I've seen them in a prairie-like setting. But nothing. And kicked up maybe a one hen, a pheasant, and saw three deer up. So in the afternoon, we went to what more typical quail habitat in southern Iowa, southwest Iowa. It was wooded fence rows and stuff that had been grown up over the years, woody draws and places like that. We finally got into some quail. The problem we did, Maxie, in the television business, they're hard to catch on camera, and we had some flushing dogs as well as pointers. We should have just put the flushing dogs away and just had the pointers.
Especially if you get in the wooded area.
Well, yeah, because...
There's no open area here to pick it up. You're pretty lucky if the camera can catch it.
Yeah, even that, Maxie, the flushing dog, you don't know. Bang, yep. They're in there, and the birds are up and yep. gone, and the camera guy, you know, he's...
There's no point that gives you an idea that they're there.
Yeah, so with a pointy dog, you get ready, yep. and anyway, so we kind of screwed up there. So then, but we got seven or eight quail that afternoon, walked 7 miles to do it. The next day, we went up towards Council Bluffs, north of there a little bit. I tell you, I was looking at a program that Iowa does. They have a public access program like Minnesota
right,
does,
yep.
but they add a habitat element to that. So they go to the landowner and say, here's a piece of land that you're really not making any money on, right? And he goes, yeah, you're right. We'll come in and create a prairie for you, a wildlife habitat place.
Excavate where you need.
Do whatever yep. we need to do to create the habitat here, usually grassland prairie. And all you have to do is let people hunt there as a walk-in area. They can't drive all over it, but they can walk in. And that's the trade-off. So it's a unique program.
Okay, but what does the farmer get out of it?
He gets this land. He gets a payment.
Oh, he does get a payment.
He gets a payment, and they also plant and produce and maintain the prairie for him. So it's basically making sure that the habitat they create is maintained. Farmer gets a payment for the... for retiring that land,
yep.
so to speak, for 10 years, it's a 10-year deal, and then the public gets to walk in there and hunt. So, but it was very encouraging to see all the grassland in Western Minnesota,
Western Iowa.
I mean, Western Iowa. I mean, I was stunned at how
really?
Much was there. Yeah, but it's huge. Some of the fields are 40 and 80 acres. I mean, they're huge, and we had just, you know, 7 or 8 of us with a few dogs, and it was a perfect day, weather in the 50s. And I'm saying all this because we hardly flushed a bird. Hardly. I never.
You think they were running on you, or don't you know if they were there?
Some were running. Some were holding tight because you easily walk by them in that prairie grass. And I think most of the roosters, they'd flew out to the pick cornfield in the morning to feed, and they had no reason to come back to the grass until night. Because it was beautiful out there.
That's
they could,
right.
You could sit out there in that pick corn. So from that standpoint.
Well, did you go towards sundown then? Did you hunt it towards sundown or not?
Not that close to sundown, no. I was exhausted by then.
I've taken a few mental notes. Go ahead.
I know where all the ducks and geese are.
Where?
They're on the Missouri River in western Iowa.
You can see them, huh?
Tens of thousands of mallards. I'm not kidding. 600,000 snow geese are still sitting there. And here's why. The Missouri River is running high, and when it runs high, the water actually reverses in all the drainage tiles
yeah.
and floods the fields. So there's a lot of standing corn that's flooded, beans flooded. They're never going to get it out until it's frozen solid. And the mallards and the geese... This is the like a Thanksgiving dinner all over that part of the state. And in the morning, you just see it's gorgeous. The sunrise and those birds are going out milling around mallards. It's really something.
Were people hunting it or?
Oh yeah, I had no idea that that part of this country was holding that.
So on the other side of the river is what?
Nebraska.
Nebraska and then South Dakota if you go further north.
Huh? Yeah, but further north, South Dakota, I talked to a friend up at Lake Andes, and he said they can't find a mallard up there. It froze. And then so all those birds, they hightailed it south for.
And they'll stay right there until they
have to
go
until
somewhere.
They'll stay there until that freezes. Yeah.
So anyway. A couple mental notes. I wish you'd talk to me before you went down there. Don't work the flatlands by the river. For quail, number one.
You didn't even know
it was
flat.
There we go again.
Huh? Did you hear that turkey?
That's his phone. That's Ron's phone.
That's a great, isn't it? I'm going to have to shut it off. I use that to call turkeys in the springtime. So I meant to interrupt.
So let's stay away from the flatlands.
I just as soon interrupt your tips anyway.
Number two, if you're going to work the big switchgrass patches like that, do it at sundown.
It's time to take a break.
Two in the afternoon is not going to do any good.
We have an authentic
what else
expert,
I got here?
John Gehrink. We're going to talk ice fishing.
Okay, when we come back. Welcome back, Live Outdoors. Mike Max, Ron Shira.
Hey, Maxie, now we have a real expert here with us, right? Huh?
Yeah, who we got?
We got John Gehrink joining us. John is my number one fishing guide up there in Lake of the Woods at Border View Lodge. Good evening, John.
Hey, good to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you. Listen, I always need a report on ice fishing, the status of it. So I thought, might as well start the farthest north I can think of, and that's you overlooking the Rainy River and Lake of the Woods. In a nutshell, what do you got going there, John?
You know what? It's looking pretty good. Four Mile Bay is completely froze over. The Rainy River, for the most part, there's a few small little open spots, but Four Mile Bay is the important one, and that so far is froze over, as long as we don't get any hard winds.
Do you have any idea how thick the ice is there?
No, thin. I'm guessing an inch or less, but it is froze over.
Okay, so continued cool weather would. What's your prediction about when you think you can start walking out there or going with a four wheeler?
You know, if it stays like it is right now, and the forecast is looking pretty good, on average we're out there, you know, the early in December, so it's looking good for that.
So, or yeah, well, actually, we're kind of early this year. I think
we should be a little early, as long as Mother Nature cooperates.
Yeah, there are some ice fishing reports between you and here in the Twin Cities. I don't know exactly how deep thick the ice is, but you know, this is a dangerous time to be going out there if you don't know what you're doing.
This is a tough time of year. It's just be careful. This is a real dangerous time of year to go ice fishing.
So you haven't heard about any smaller lakes south of you then?
You know what? I have not. I don't know if they're venturing out on Red Lake yet at all. That's another lake that really is dependent on the wind, you know, to get locked up with the ice.
So. Yeah.
Well, some of the smaller lakes possibly, you know, but I have not talked to anyone that's been out trying it yet.
Well, that Four Mile Bay, when that gets ready to fish, or fishable, I should say, is that a good starting spot for the lake?
Yeah, you know, we'd prefer to get over Pine Island on the other side of Four Mile Bay, you know, out on the main lake. But depending on the ice conditions, if you can get closer over toward the river channel, and that, of course, that's all dependent on ice conditions. There's some good walleyes to be had. The walleye population this fall in the Rainy River, especially late, was just phenomenal.
Well, folks listening, if they're interested in trying Lake of the Woods ice fishing, and I can't think of a better spot to go if you have a hankering for walleye or sauger, right. How do they reach you, John, at Border View Lodge?
You know, the easiest way is our phone number is 1-800-PRO-FISH. Or, of course, you can look us up online at borderviewlodge.com.
How was your fall?
It was real good.
Was it?
You know, yeah, it was. The later it got, when you were sitting in a deer stand, you should have been on the Rainy River.
Boy, please, story of Ron's life.
Well, you can say that again. So, what was it? God, it got me speechless here because that was so true.
Why was that?
You know, it's generally that it's all dependent on our shiner run.
Yep.
And even though we didn't net a whole lot of shiners for our bait throughout the year, something really drew the walleyes in. The guys that were fishing later this fall were having 100-plus fish days, you know, but they were battling the cold.
See, I understand you're going to have some new fish limits up there.
You know what? That is true. They're lowering the sauger limit in the winter to 2 instead of 4. Nothing earth-shattering or hard to remember, but that's the deal. And then in the spring on the Rainy River, it'll be catch and release only.
You like that? Do you like that change?
I do. You know, there's most of the people that come up, especially in the spring, you know, they're looking for trophy fish anyway.
Yeah.
The limit was 2, you know, and so it's not big changes, not anything earth-shattering.
No, but sometimes that river, you could walk across the river on boats, stepping from boat to boat, couldn't
you? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm always in favor. You get something like that, the walleyes are vulnerable, sort of. They're all stacked in there. I think, and word gets out, and you got a jillion boats, and, yeah, limit's 2, but they're catching 122, and how many of those die of hook wounds, et cetera. So it's just But you still have that with catch and release. But anyway,
right, and that's spawning, our spawning time too. So I think it's all good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And now my cohort here, Mike Max,
here it comes.
He envisions himself as this great waterfowler.
I'm just pretty good in the outdoors in general.
Yeah. See what I mean? He's an all around amateur. You're waterfowler.
You're saying even I can catch a fish up there, huh?
your waterfowl are all gone, aren't they?
Yeah, for the most part. There were some late bluebills, but yeah, everything was gone fairly early this year.
Well, I'm gonna send Mike Max up there because that's just
that's exactly what he wants me to go. He says, you'll be the only hunter on the lake then. So if there are any, you can get them all.
That's just the kind of challenge he wants. Well, John Gehrink of Border View, thank you for joining us, and we'll get back in touch with you in a few weeks. Hopefully, you'll be drilling some ice holes, and we'll get some fishing to talk about.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John.
Take a break. Tell them about Jason Williamson, who's committed to the Gophers. Great running back. His numbers are off the charts. If you're sitting at Minnesota, how do you gauge whether or not that's Big Ten speed, or do you take a kid like that and say, well, you know what, at minimum we can make him into a linebacker?
Well, I think, you know, when I was talking to you over the weekend, I saw all the games on Thursday, all the games on Friday. It was so much different than when I left in 2008, from the standpoint that the high school coaches are doing an outstanding job of bringing different types of offenses in. I mean, every game was like, wow, what are these guys going to be running? Because when I left, it was a lot of wing tee and a lot of, you know, smash mouth football. And the young man from Owatonna, I think he's done a great job. He's a good back for high school. I think that's maybe where they're looking at him in the future too. Is he's got very good size. And Penn State forever in their glory years took high school running backs and made them All-American linebackers. Because it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that usually the tailback on everybody's team is the best athlete in the high school. The easiest way to put the ball in his hands is to hand it to him. Mm-hmm. And so Owatonna and Jeff's done a great job down there. They've got a great offense. That was an exciting game to watch. Elk River runs a straight full back house, you know, full backfield tee. And so they had a completely different offense that that Owatonna had to get ready to play. You know, you watch the spread offenses. There was some really good athletes at the Minnehaha, St. Paul Academy, Blake. I mean, they got four schools going to school there, I guess, now, or combining to make a football team. But they're very, very athletic and outstanding, and they run a spread, you know, spread it out, throw it around. But anyway, it was just really exciting. And on the defensive side of the ball, that's what was really enlightening and totally different to me, was that some teams play a 3-4 front now. Some teams are still running a 4-3 front. Some teams are running a 4-2-5 front. What I call the radar, there was a couple teams that made the playoffs that were, you know, just two down and everybody else was standing up. So it was really fun to watch all the games at the US Bank Stadium. And what a beautiful place that is. You know, a little different than the Metrodome.
Gordy, we got to go, but I want to thank you for your time. We got to do this more regularly because you've got such great insights into all of the above. So thank you for giving us a few minutes, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to you, Mike. And I'm going to try to get over there maybe a little bit on Friday or Saturday, but I've got all the daughters coming back and all the son-in-laws coming and the grandkids. So,
oh boy,
that takes priority over I saw a lot of great games this past weekend, and the Gophers looked really good. I did catch the first half of their game, and it's it's going to be a really, really good game, I think, on Saturday. I think Wisconsin's struggling at quarterback right now, and they're really down to their second and 13 guys in their defensive line on defense. So I can't remember, but I do know it was the last time I coached here. That's the last time they've won the Axe, I think.
It's been 2004, and they haven't been, you were there in 93, I think it was, when Camp Randall and Arne Carlson was there as the governor, I remember. So, hey, appreciate it, Gordy. Have a great Thanksgiving, and you and I will talk soon.
You bet, Mike. Thank you very much.
You bet. Gordy Shaw, one of the all-time greats in this town. Every high school coach knows Gordy Shaw. Take a break. Come back. News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back, Sports to the Max. News Talk 830 WCCO. I had somebody approach me at the health club today, and they wanted to talk about Jimmy Butler and the Jimmy Butler saga with the Minnesota Timberwolves. And we got into a rather engaging conversation about when you really think about it, it's a difficult situation. Because in some respects, what Butler did was simply exercise the power that he was afforded. In other words, he used the leverage that he had as a player to force a trade to Philadelphia. And one might concur with others. One might surmise that more power to him, that any of us that can take advantage of the system should do so. If the employer agrees to let you proceed that way, or they don't have a choice, then why wouldn't you take advantage of that and follow your dreams and your heart to wherever that takes you? So therefore, that's really all that Jimmy Butler did was he didn't have control over getting traded from Chicago to here. And once he got here, he made a calculated decision that he wasn't coming back. Now, he was still under contract, so all that he did was find a way to maneuver through that contract. He found a way to get what he wanted without violating, I guess, the rules of a contract. Well, technically he didn't. But he sat out how many games for general soreness or tired or whatever it was that he called it. And so we had Glenn Taylor on yesterday. We were talking about this. I said, how are you guys going to resolve this thing at the league level, because the players can do whatever they want. Right now, the way I see it, if they want to sit out, they don't have to play any game that they don't want to play. They just say they're sore. And God help you, if a guy pulled a hamstring on a night that he said they didn't want to play, you know, now you'd have real issues. So that led to an interesting conversation about what can you do? What can you do to prevent another Jimmy Butler situation? How can you put in place something, a template, a contract, a collective bargaining agreement, so that a guy can't walk all over you, not just asking for a trade? That seems to me to be legitimate, that you can go to an organization and say, I'm not happy here, trade me. But to be able to take days off and training camp off without any ramifications, he didn't get punished at all for that. He didn't lose a dime. He didn't get fined. He didn't get anything. All he has to do is say that he's sore. And he doesn't have to play that night. What can you do to take a stand against that? I don't know what the answer is. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. Maybe there's somebody out there that's an employer. And I don't know what you can do if somebody says, I don't feel good today, and what happens if they've already used their sick days up? Well, I don't know what leverage you have. How do you decide whether somebody's sick or injured or wants tonight off? Now it's been a remarkable healing process for Butler, because he hasn't missed anything for Philadelphia. So apparently, whatever it was that was lingering is now he's cured. Maybe it's that East Coast sunshine and the great attitudes that they have out there. Maybe that's lifted his spirits up and he's able to play through now. Maybe he's finally pronounced himself healthy. But what would you do What can you do to a player, to someone that says they don't want to play? Now, I think it's despicable what he did. And I find it, when you think about it, this is what he really did. What he really did was he got up in the morning and he said, we all have a job to do on this team. But I don't want to do my job. So what we're going to do is, you guys are going to do my job for me. I'm going to sit and relax, but do know that I'm still going to get paid. I'm going to get paid even though you guys are going to do my job for me. I can't think of anything more disrespectful to a colleague, to someone you work with, than saying, I'm just going to be lazy and mail this in and you're going to have to do my work for me. I can't think of anything more despicable. You know, we got people already in this country, and I've talked about this before, and you can bank on it, right? We're heading from, we got 6 weeks before the first of the year, and be assured that they are going to use every one of their sick days before then. And that doesn't matter if they're sick or not. They don't give a damn about the fact that you got to work for them and take their place and pick up the slack. They don't care because they look at those sick days as vacation days, and that's despicable. That's despicable. And you've all worked with some of those people. You've seen those people. You know, everybody knows they're not sick. And what they're basically doing is they're spitting in your face and they're saying, I don't care. I'm going to take this day off and pretend I'm sick and you're going to do the work for me. I can't think of a lower form of disrespect from a colleague, but to be that selfish, that narcissistic, and that entitled that says, well, this is the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to take a sick day because I got one coming even though I'm not sick. And that's what Jimmy Butler was doing. You will do the work for me, but I will get paid because I've decided that's what I want to do. Now, if you're the commissioner of a league or a boss or an employer, I don't know how you get around. I don't know how you take a step towards putting a stop to that. What can you say? The easy thing is to say, oh, fine them. Fine them for what? For saying they're sore? That they can't go tonight? I don't know. But it's what's going to cost the NBA dearly, and it has in this market. People can't get excited about that. You don't see it very often in the National Hockey League. You see it a little bit in football at the end of the year when a team's out of it. In other words, when they can't make the playoffs anymore and they got 2 weeks left and, you know, Aaron Rodgers came back and played a game last year against Carolina, they lost, they're out of it, so he went back to the bench and rested himself again. You see a little bit of it there. You don't see in baseball, it's kind of controlled by the manager. In other words, they want to develop prospects. They'll sit guys. There are guys that want days off, all that stuff. But in general, it's controlled by the manager. I don't know how you change this in the NBA. I don't know how you change it in society. People that say, well, I got 8 sick days, I'm going to use all that. You're despicable. You're despicable and you're disrespectful to people that work with you. And I hope they shove it up your nose when they get a chance to do it. I hope they demote you. I hope you don't get that promotion that you want if that's the way you play the game. I hope that's your lot in life. Because if you think you're fooling people, you're not. If Jimmy Butler thinks he's fooling anybody, he wasn't. Take a break, come back. Sports to the Max, News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back. Al Malmberg, I haven't had a chance to talk to you for a few days. How are you? Is he there? I thought we were just talking to him.
We are. Maxie.
How are you, Al?
I am doing well, thank you.
Good to visit with you always.
I was really proud of you.
Yeah?
Your filter kicked in.
That's as nice as I can be about that topic.
Yeah. I was really proud of you. You used the term nose.
Yeah. Nose. I did. Yes.
Yes, you did.
Yes. I got very close to using the nose is the right word, right?
Susan was very nervous.
Yep. Not as nervous as Hammer was yesterday when Sid called me a son of a something.
But that's a compliment.
But I think he got to the button okay.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, you've worked with those kind of people, right? Over the years? Once in a while?
Every once in a while. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But what always gets me out is they always think they're fooling people. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you are correct.
Yeah.
I've got a horrible echo on this end. Do you have it on your end?
I do not. I do not. I do not. I do not.
Well, now we do.
Now we do.
I don't know what would be causing that.
What would be causing that? Causing that. Susan. I'm sorry. Are you still hearing it? Hey, you got some guys coming in studio tonight.
We have. It's always such an honor to have every year. We've done this. I don't know how many years we've done this in a row. We have the midshipmen in from the Naval Academy for what is called Op Info Week, Operation Information. And certain midshipmen are selected to come back and visit area high schools and talk about the Naval Academy. And so we have them on the air, and it's a real honor.
And obviously, you can inspire kids to want to be there, but, boy, you got to make the grade to get invited, right?
You know, the last time I was involved with the Naval Academy, the last year, I think we had around 12,000 applications for
really?
The Naval Academy. And out of that 12,000, around 1,200 were selected to become midshipmen.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very competitive.
Do many, because obviously if they have that offer, they might have other offers. Do many of those 1,200 say no?
It happens. But, you know, when you're an information officer, or what we call the blue and gold officer, if somebody applied for the Naval Academy, we encourage them to apply to all the military academies.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just smart on their part to do that.
Yep. Yep. And if that's the route they want to go, getting into a military academy,
yeah.
Obviously they may have a preference based on water versus air or whatever, but
sure.
Either way, you're going to be okay.
Well, you know how I love the aviation world.
Yeah.
I was stunned to learn when I was getting involved with the Naval Academy is that more astronauts have come out of the Naval Academy than any of the military.
Why
academies.
Would that be, do you think?
It's a good question. They're smarter.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. But you also have more prospect of becoming a pilot with the Naval Academy because you have land-based operations and you have ship-based operations.
And so a lot of guys are flying in the Naval Academy.
I know I would have.
Yeah, oh boy, that'd have been fun, huh?
Oh man, shoulda, woulda, coulda.
What was Top Gun again? What was Tom Cruise? What was that? He was that. Was that the Air Force Academy? What was that?
No, that was Naval. It was Top Gun is a school you go to after you graduate from the Naval Academy.
Oh, okay, I see.
And after you've gone through your training, and then you'll be selected to go to that school.
Yep.
This is the way I believe it works. So.
What's the best way to become a commercial pilot that flies us around on the airlines?
Well, it used to be being in the military because of all the hours that you would accrue.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there aren't as many people leaving the military that have, aviation pilot experience. So I think that it's a toss-up between going in the military and becoming a pilot or getting your degree in aviation. And then putting in the time and, go to work for one of the regional carriers and then getting picked up by one of the major carriers.
Sure. Well, are you going to take a few calls tonight, too, for these guys? It sounds like an interesting topic that people might have an interest in.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes, as they say, man.
Yeah.
And I will talk to you tomorrow night, okay?
Very good. I was hoping we could talk about the Vikings. Boy, that was.
Notice how I never got to that?
All they needed was
Case Keenum takes him on a game-winning drive.
But that's rare for this year. but all they needed was one more quarter, Maxie.
One more quarter, and
they had figured them out.
We'll figure that out tomorrow night. Hey, thanks. I got a great show ahead. I invite people to listen. The midshipmen going to be the RNC. They're here right now, grabbing a donut, and they'll join Al Malbrook after the break on WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.